that is the main subject matter in Nectar of Devotion, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Everyone loves love. Everyone wants to love. Everyone wants to give love. When you're a little kid, you want to be loved by your parents. When you are a teenager, you want to experience puppy love between one teen and another. Then when, as you get older in your teenage years, you want to experience mature love, what makes the world go round. And then in your 20s and 30s, you're busy trying to establish love and enjoy it. And in your 40s, you're busy trying to recuperate from love. And in your 50s and 60s, you just become cynical. That's the love cycle of the material world. We should not repudiate love. We should not abandon love. Nor should we have a cheap, sensual understanding of love. If you are really interested in love, you should seek to develop an authorized understanding of love. And that is what Nectar of Devotion is proposing to do with your life. Nectar of Devotion, the summary study of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu by Srila Rupa Goswami, is proposing to give you an injection of real loving propensities. Looked at another way, Nectar Devotion proposes to revive in you your original loving propensities for Krishna. To appreciate this love subject matter, you have to be a little humble. Humility means that you understand, maybe I don't know what real love is. Most people do not have this humility. Most people think, oh yeah, love, yeah, I know what that is. I've seen it in the movies. I've seen it on television. I've read about it in books. No. To advance in Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga, the science and art and culture of transcendental loving service to the Lord, you have to have the humility that maybe you don't know what love is. Maybe you have simply been presented with an illusion of what is love. Maybe you are pursuing an illusion, dreaming of an illusion, and you have no real contact with the actual substance of love. Now that would require humility, wouldn't it? In our conditioned state, we're so sure, yeah, I know what love would feel like. I would get this warm, fuzzy feeling. No, the bhakti yogi has the humility to accept that if I'm going to be introduced to the realm of love, I must first be purified. So those of you who are intent on actually loving, you should very eagerly embrace the purificatory process. That will allow you to generate real love instead of materialistic conceptions masquerading as love. Let us read from Nectar Devotion, the preface. The basic principle of the living condition is that we have a general propensity to love someone. No one can live without loving someone else. This propensity is present in every living being. Even an animal like a tiger has this loving propensity, at least in a dormant stage, and it is certainly present in the human beings. I saw a video about tiger love. It's all controlled by the laws of nature. A certain time of the year comes, and the female tiger emanates a certain fragrance, and the male tigers for miles around can understand that it's love time. So the male tiger, captivated by this fragrance, searches out the female tiger, and then he approaches her, and she growls and snarls at him and drives him away. And then he comes back the next day, the same thing, and drives him away. Again he comes back, and again she swats him with her paw, and get out of here. still he comes back. And finally, after the fourth or fifth time, he comes back and his reception is completely different. Now she nuzzles him, hugs him, and, you know, all that. So then, a child is conceived. You know, after four or five times of driving him away, you know, and treating him like he's dirt, all of a sudden, one time, she's just completely receptive. So the male tiger, you know, has his party. And then the female tiger, she's pregnant. And then as soon as she's pregnant, the male tiger takes off. Never to be seen again. So the female tiger, she gives birth to the baby tigers. And she has to kill flesh to feed the baby tigers. And she raises them all on her own. So, Prabhupada's writing here that the loving propensity you can see even in a tiger. So yes, these tigers were nuzzling and hugging and all that kind of thing. So temporarily you could see the manifestation of some spark of affection, even though it's all driven by material nature. And as Prabhupada writes, certainly this loving propensity is present in human beings. Love is the human being's biggest hang-up. You may have money, you may have a nice house that nobody breaks into, you may have all those things. But if you don't have love, you feel it's worthless. Completely worthless. And many people, if they have that loving feeling, they can put up with so much austerity as long as they have that loving feeling. Of course, you know the mantra that my mother taught me when I was a little boy. She told me, always remember, romance without finance is a nuisance. Still, she acknowledged the existence of the romance propensity, but she was teaching me you have to be practical. Although that propensity, that flavor may be there, without the financial situation to sustain it, you know, it'll be simply a botheration. So, in any case, everyone wants to share in loving affairs. In the human beings, the woman has this dream, and also the man has this dream, although these dreams manifest differently. Strange enough, though, people are never satisfied in their loving propensities. Ultimately, they just feel that, well, this relationship, the way it's going, is that's about as good as you're going to get in this world, so you might as well just accept it for what it is. You know, it's not going to be better than this. It could be a lot worse. There are some benefits in the relationship that cause you to put up with all the drawbacks, so, you know. But no one is satisfied through and through. And certainly no one is experiencing increasing satisfaction day by day in their loving affairs. No. For increasing satisfaction day by day, there has to be the spiritual platform present. On the material platform, everything diminishes. Just like the body dwindles, similarly, the so-called loving affairs of the subtle body also dwindle. And then you feel, oh, the thrill is gone. The thrill has left me. That's the movement of time. Because everything in the material world, physical and subtle and psychic, or whatever, emotional, is all saturated by time. So if you want to actually love, you must become free from time. Because time is what is corroding and destroying your attempts for love. But people are so stupid, they blame each other. What happened to you? You changed. Someone was sending a series of jokes around, and one of the jokes was about men and women and their expectations. The woman expects, when a woman marries the man, she expects him to change, and he doesn't. And when the man marries a woman, He expects her not to change. Oh, yes, this is the way she is. She's always going to be so sweet and nice. And she changes. Don't laugh too loud. Is your wife here? But this is just two different expectations. The man's thinking, oh, she's so kind, she's so submissive, she's so attentive to all my needs. She'll never change. It'll always be like that. And of course it changes. Especially when the woman has kids and then the man realizes that the wife likes the kids more than the husband. Many wives have told me that actually they like the kids better than their husband. You know, husbands you tolerate, you put up with, but the kids, they're your everything. Yes, is that so? No, no. Yes, you say yes? Any mothers here? Yeah, so, yes? Okay. And, of course, the women, they marry a man, and women always have this thing about making the man their project. They have this project complex. Yeah, he's not everything that I want, but I think I can whip him into shape. Right? They get on the telephone to their girlfriends and, yeah, I know he's got these rough edges. Yeah, I know this is not right, but I can fix that. Yeah, you know, I can deal with that. So they're thinking, yes, I'm going to change him. But some years into the marriage, what do they realize? He doesn't change. And nor does he want to change. In fact, the men get quite angry about this project complex. Right? And look, if you want to be with me, you accept me the way I am. So in this way, they have these two different conceptions about so-called love. No one is completely satisfied. And certainly, there's not any increased satisfaction as day by day goes by. And people can't even love one person. What to speak of love others? More than one. They're not successful loving one person. They basically put up with each other for as long as they can. And nowadays, you know, when they get tired of putting up with each other, they divorce so easily. Often they don't even marry in the first place. They're afraid. You know, probably this love is going to run out pretty quick. In Australia, they have, you know, the prenuptial agreements, very popular now. Where before they marry, they, you know, sign a document saying, okay, I brought to the table these assets, you brought to the table those assets, so if we happen to separate, we'll retain our assets, you know, independently. So this is very important. It's a prenuptial agreement. No one here has made such? Because each one is afraid, you know, when we do have a fight in the future and we hate each other, what if a court arranges that she takes all my assets, or he takes all my assets? You know, I'm the one who brought the majority of the assets to this relationship. So they make what's called a prenuptial agreement, where, you know, okay, I brought the house, so if we break up, I get the house back, not you. This is very secure love, you see. And often they don't even marry at all. The Bhagavatam predicts this in the 12th canto. Dam pache bidurjir hetu. Men and women will associate together simply because of lust. There'll be no other reason, hetu, than that. No other cause than that. That's all. And when this physical satisfaction deteriorates, which it must, because it's not real satisfaction, then they break up. Often they don't even want to marry. They say, just take it day by day. We'll pursue the relationship and see how far it gets. This love question is very important. As I said, not only are we comfortable fully loving one person, we can't love more than one. Who knows the art of how to love everyone? People talk about it. I just want to love everyone. I want to show love. I want to show care. How do you do that? So therefore we have this nectar of devotion. As Prabhupada writes, the missing point, however, is where to repose our love so that everyone can become happy. Now think about that. It's a very deep point. Where do you deposit your love? It's like you deposit money into a bank. Where do you deposit your love so that everyone can become happy? Who's ever thought about that? How to make everyone happy with my love? No. You don't think, oh, just one person for a short time and I'll be satisfied. What about everybody? Why are we so intent on focusing our loving propensity on one tiny person? What about the rest of the world? Or if we have some children, okay, just my children. But why simply those living entities? There's countless living entities in this world. We should be concerned how to love everyone. What is the technique for doing that? That is the Mahatma, the broad-minded person, truly. To be broad-minded means to be thinking, how do I love everyone? And not say, oh, it's impossible. It's not possible to love everyone, so I'll just focus on one person and we'll shut everybody else out. Yeah, we'll just build our own world together. We'll build a world of our own. We'll just have a love world of our own, and who cares about everybody else? You have those kind of persons. Then you have the kind of persons who say, yes, we want to love everyone, but they have no idea how to do it. They just say like that. It's a sentiment. So Prabhupada writes here, the missing point is where to repose our love so that everyone can become happy. Now that's an awesome goal. Think about it. That's a goal worthy of your life. That's a goal worthy of your efforts. That's uplifting, enthusing, enlivening. Rather than a small vision. I just want to find one person for me to love. I want one person who's going to love me and not pay attention to anyone else. Isn't that very miserly? You are that person who's supposed to love me. You had better pay attention to me. Isn't that miserly and limited? Yeah, it's very selfish. Remember, you are the one who is in love with me. You are mine. Focus upon me. Worship me. It's a very miserly life, isn't it? As if there's no one else in the world except you two. Of course, the mundaners glorify that kind of feeling, you know. Lost in a world together. The desert island feeling. Just me and you on a desert island. With nowhere else to go. But the Vedic knowledge is not concerned with that kind of so-called love. The Vedic knowledge is concerned with the expansive love. So much so that you're thinking, how can I deposit my love in such a way that everyone can become happy? That is a glorious goal. If you start as a teenager with this goal, your whole life will blossom and your loving propensities will expand and expand. The main reason why we cannot expand our loving propensity properly is because of the bodily conception of life. Thinking you are the body confines and restricts your loving propensity. I am this body, and I only love other bodies in relation to my body. It's a very, very limited and actually animalistic way of loving. We'll continue reading. At the present moment, the human society teaches one to love his country or family or his personal self. But there is no information where to repose the loving propensity so that everyone can be happy. This is the Vaishnava vision. Vishvam Purnam Sukhayate. Let the whole world be happy. It's not impossible. Amazingly enough, we have the means by which the whole world can become happy. And a Vaishnava is concerned about that. Whether one is brahmachari, grihastha, or in between, our lifestyle is one of actually preparing us to be able to teach everyone how to be happy. That's a worthy goal to live for. Don't push it out like, oh, I'm not ready to do that. I'm just a this, or you know my circumstances is not possible. No, you should see how it's possible that you can contribute to the happiness of everyone. Then you'll feel your loving propensity expand. You won't feel so miserable and miserly about yourself. You see, what's making you stressed out and frustrated is this very narrow conception of whom you should be concerned with. Hey, I'm just taking care of myself and, you know, concerned with a few others, that's all. Yeah. No, that's not even Grihastha life. Grihasthas often have this tendency to just be concerned what goes on behind their own doors. This is our world, our home, underneath the gum tree. We don't think about anything else outside of our doors. That's actually not Grihastha life, according to the Vedic conception. Therefore, the Vedic protocols say that before a man sits down to eat at the dinner table, he goes to the door and he calls out three times up and down the street, "Is anyone hungry? Please come take." Three times. "Is anyone hungry? Please come and take." And if someone answers the call, you have to wait until they eat to their full satisfaction. And only after the persons have eaten can you take your meals. Shall we try that? What do you think, Hema Krishna? You can do that? Go to your front gate? Huh? It'd be interesting. Who might try? You might try?
Yeah.
Is anyone hungry? Please come. Three times. Of course, in Australia, no one will come, except for devotees. Yeah, you call up the street. "Is anyone hungry? Please come take your meals." There's a van full of devotees waiting outside. Yeah. We've heard Jhana's cooked tonight. We're ready. Old van load of traveling brahmacharis, you know. Yes, we're hungry. They eat everything. I leave you with nothing. Anyway, that is the conception of what real household life should be. According to the Vedic conception, household life without charity is a very miserable life. Householders are always giving money, time, resources, abilities, always giving, giving. And that militates against the inherent selfishness that often is there whenever man and woman come together. I was listening today to Prabhupada describe the whole world as a field of attraction between male and female. The whole world is just an arena where that attraction between male and female happens. So those of you who want to be truly single all your life, you have to take this into account. This is the kind of atmosphere that you're developing in. Within the arena of male-female attraction, here you are, trying to go the opposite way. Your austerities to do that will be much more comfortable for you if you can have a holistic understanding of why you're performing those austerities. You are trying to benefit the whole world. In this way, Grihastha life and Brahmacharya life are two different styles for achieving the broad-mindedness of being able to love everyone. There is no information where to repose the loving propensity so that everyone can become happy. That missing point is Krishna. And the nectar of devotion teaches us how to stimulate our original love for Krishna and how to be situated in that position where we can enjoy our blissful life. Think about that. Stimulating your original love for Krishna. Everyone likes to be stimulated. So nectar devotion is meant to stimulate your ecstatic love of Godhead. It's teaching you the process how to do that. And, once again, it's about lifestyle management. How to organize your own lifestyle so that you are situated in the position where you can enjoy blissful life. If you want to enjoy blissful life, you have to make some adjustments in your life. You have to organize your life. Now, how many are ready for that? Those who are serious about Krishna consciousness are serious about organizing their life so they can be in a position in which you can enjoy blissful life. We'll go on reading. In the primary stage, a child loves his parents, then his brothers and sisters, and as he daily grows up, he begins to love his family, society, community, country, nation, or even the whole human society. Yes, you've seen that. Everyone knows this experience. You loved your parents, or you tried to love them. There might have been some problems these days, especially with so many persons growing up with only one parent. In Mumbai, I was speaking at IIT, India Institute of Technology, and I was also addressing a congregation of 500 men between the ages of 15 and 30, and one newspaper reporter from the Indian Express came. It's a major daily, and they put the article of our program on the first page of the newspaper, and I was explaining. He said, listen to the statistics of what's going on in the world. Do you want India to be like this? I said, did you know right now, in England, the home of Anglo civilization, in England right now, more children are conceived outside of wedlock than inside. Yes. So, people these days may not even know how to love their parents. Generally, their parents are angry, don't know what to do with their children, don't know why they had them. Okay. Besides parents, you may try to love brothers and sisters. And then, as you grow older, you try to love your whole family, society, community, country, nation. Like today was Australia Day. Yes? Yesterday was Australia Day. I saw one guy driving yesterday. He had his pickup truck, and on both sides he had the flags attached to his, pickup truck, waving in the wind as he drove. And I could see he was feeling proud and happy, He's driving fast up the street and the flags with, So he's feeling, love for his country. Similarly, in the USA now, since September 11th, the terrorist attacks, so many flag wavers are there, and signs, big signs of flags, and the statement, "United we stand, divided we fall," and all these kind of slogans. I remember during my youthful days, during the Vietnam War, when so many young people were protesting against the government, then the conservative people, they would have these pictures of flags with, the slogan, "America, love it or leave it," like that. So, people do want to love. They want to care. But Prabhupada writes here, the loving propensity is not satisfied even by loving all human society. Now just think. Even if you can love all of human society, still your loving propensity will not be satisfied. Think about that. You don't know anyone who can, but even if you could love all of human society, still you will not be satisfied. Now that should teach you something about life. You have to change and try something else. That loving propensity remains imperfectly fulfilled until we know who is the Supreme Beloved. That is the goal of our life, to connect with the Supreme Beloved. Why is Krishna the Supreme Beloved? Because Krishna is unlimitedly attractive. Someone who is unlimitedly attractive can be the Supreme Beloved for you. But as soon as there's limitation in the attractiveness, how can they be supremely beloved? You'll perceive the limitations. You've all had that experience, yes? In dealing with your so-called loved ones, you simultaneously perceive the limitations, right? And you speak, well, you have to be practical, not everything's going to be right, and you just have to tolerate, and but you can't really give your heart fully in these loving exchanges if you perceive limitation. There'll be reservation, and well, you got to be, you know, tolerate, and but in Krishna, there's no limitation. Therefore, you can love Krishna without hesitation and reservation. That example is set by the cowherd damsels of Braja, the gopis. Lord Chaitanya has stated, Ramya kachit upasana Braja Vardu Vagene Yakopita. There is no better way of loving Krishna than that demonstrated by the cowherd damsels, the Braja Vardu of Vrindavan. Their method of upasana is better than any other kind of upasana. Their method of worship is the highest. They love Krishna without reservation and without hesitation. The queens of Dwarka, they feel that, well, Krishna is our husband, and we're bound by social formalities, social ties. But these cowherd damsels of Vrindavan, they're not married to Krishna. Yet they've given everything to Krishna. That is the real standard. That's how the women of Dwarka think. We're married to Krishna. Our relationship is caught up in social ties and formalities. But the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan, they have no hold on Krishna other than their pure love. They're not married to him. They're not supposed to associate with him. They're young girls, many of them married. He's a young boy. Still, they give everything to Krishna unconditionally, without the support of social ties and marriage and family like that. So that's why even the queens of Dwarka, they glorify the cowherd damsels of Vrindavan. Now, you must understand that Krishna does not depend on anyone else for his satisfaction. These queens of Dwarka and these gopi girls of Vrindavan, they're expansions of Krishna's energy. So Krishna is still self-sufficient by even in his interaction with them. He doesn't go outside of himself to enjoy. Our love can be fully satisfied only when it is reposed in Krishna. This theme is the sum and substance of the nectar of devotion, which teaches us how to love Krishna in five different transcendental mellows. This should show you that if you are seriously interested in becoming Krishna conscious, you have to be concerned with how to love Krishna. You have to have some patience to learn this art, some dedication. We're not saying that you should be learning how to believe in Krishna. We are saying you should be learning how to love Krishna, how to actively and dynamically love Krishna. That is the process of bhakti yoga. We'll go on reading. Our loving propensity expands just as a vibration of light or air expands, but we do not know where it ends. This is what you want to feel. You want to feel your loving propensity expand without end, but you get frustrated because it doesn't happen in the material world. There's always some wall, some impediment, some diminishing. Yes, you've all had that agonized feeling. Oh, I just can't love all the way that I want to love. Very frustrating feeling. That means your loving propensity doesn't have the room to expand. Actually, your loving propensity has the capacity to expand without end. But we don't know how to do that. That's why we feel weird and cramped up, stunted in this material world. That's because our loving propensity is boxed up due to so many material situations, material relationships. That is the problem with material relationships. Entering into material relationships stunts the growth of your loving propensity. In material relationships, your loving propensity cannot expand unlimitedly. The nectar of devotion teaches us the science of loving every one of the living entities perfectly by the easy method of loving Krishna. So this Krishna consciousness process, this bhakti yoga, is teaching you how to love every living entity perfectly. That's what's going on here. I hope you will assimilate this vision for why you are trying to take Krishna consciousness seriously. You want to learn the science of loving every living entity perfectly. Think about that. That is your mission statement. I want to learn how to love every living entity perfectly by the easy method of loving Krishna. Easy method. Ah, it's not easy, huh? Everyone says that, right? Did we ever have our discussion here about what are the difficult things in Krishna consciousness and what are the easy things? Huh? All right, we'll do that tomorrow. You get to all say, what's the things that are difficult about Krishna consciousness? We'll have a gripe session tomorrow, okay? Okay? Everyone can prepare for the gripe session. So now Prabhupada is going to cite the failure of human society in mass, in total. We have failed to create peace and harmony in human society, even by such great attempts as the United Nations, because we do not know the right method. We do not know the right method. Think about that. That's why we failed. The method is very simple, but one has to understand it with a cool head. The nectar of devotion teaches all men how to perform the simple and natural method of loving Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The simple and natural method. If we learn how to love Krishna, then it is very easy to immediately and simultaneously love every living being. This is the advantage of bhakti yoga. If you learn how to love Krishna, then it's easy to love everyone. Sometimes people ask, if everyone becomes Krishna conscious, what will happen to the world? Prabhupada would answer that sometimes. He said, don't worry, not everyone's going to take up Krishna consciousness. There'll always be enough fools to push things on, as you know it. So I'd like you to really think deeply about this goal of loving everyone. Think about that. By the easy method of loving Krishna. Sometimes you have this fear that if I focus on Krishna, what will happen to my concern for everyone? Have any of you had that fear? Raise your hands. Maybe by focusing on Krishna, I'll shut everybody else out. I'll become a strange person. Yes, you had that fear? Anyone else? Yes. You know, all this exclusively on Krishna might cause me to neglect other people. No. If you are following the method properly and loving Krishna correctly, then you are loving everyone because Krishna includes everyone. Such paranoia, such fear, is like pouring water at the root of the tree and then worrying, Maybe by pouring all the water on the roots, I'm neglecting the leaves of the tree. Now, you wouldn't think that. You know that by pouring water on the root, the water is transported to all the branches and leaves. And you know that pouring water on the roots is the most effective way for watering the tree or plant. How many of you have plants at home? Yes. So you know, I mean, if you just pour the water on the root, it'll be all right, yes? You don't worry, oh, but I'm not watering every leaf. How many of you water every leaf of your plant or trees? Anyone? No. You put the water at the root. And there's the process that will transfer the water from the root to all over the tree. It's the same thing about loving Krishna. Why should you worry? If I'm always thinking of Krishna, I'll neglect everybody else. No, putting your love on Krishna means everyone's benefiting, everyone's getting nursed. This conviction we have to develop. Otherwise, we'll never properly develop our Krishna consciousness. We'll never properly grow in Krishna consciousness. We'll start having like a schizophrenia. Yes, I know, there's Krishna, but then there's also the others that I want to love, and if I think too much about Krishna, what will happen to the other people? No. See the other people as part of Krishna, and understand that by watering the root, all living entities will become happy. You have to be able to see that, though. It's a question of developing the right vision. We have very important points that this preface to Nectar Devotion has given us. The Nectar of Devotion will teach us how to turn the one switch that will immediately brighten everything everywhere. One who does not know this method is missing the point of life. So you know, in some modern houses, they have one switch by the front door, and it turns out all the lights in the house. Anyone have a house like that? Yes? One switch by the door, and everything goes off. Very convenient, isn't it? You don't have to worry, oh, we left the light on in so-and-so's room. We have to go, please go upstairs and turn out the light. No, just by the door, one flick of the switch, and everything in the house goes off. Or some people have cars with central locking system. Anyone have such a car? You have? It makes it convenient, right? Rather than having to reach around and lock all the doors individually, asking, you know, your mates or whoever's driving with you, did you lock your door? Lock your door, please. We're not in a good neighborhood. Make sure you lock your door. No, you just, and all the doors in the car lock. So this is what it's like to learn how to love Krishna. And that's why we should be very interested in this. Okay, any questions? It is a fact that by your efforts in bhakti yoga, you are pleasing everyone. The problem is they may not be conscious of it. Just like children, mothers know that they can do so much for the kid, and the kid is not conscious of it, of this effort they're making. I don't know if anyone here has ever told their children that. You just don't know how much I've sacrificed for you. You don't know what I've gone through for you. Anyone ever say that to their kids? You ever say that? Yeah, because they're not conscious of it. It doesn't mean that you haven't given them the benefit, but they're just not aware. They just think, you know, the toys come of their own accord. The food comes of its own accord. The house is there because there's supposed to be a house there. They don't understand all the efforts. What about this one here? What's his name? Brendan. Do you understand all the efforts your father has made so that you could be, you know, have things. No. You just think it's, you're supposed to get it, right? So he's not conscious. He's got a nice shirt. What does it say? Right. Probably his mother spent so much time picking out that shirt, right? 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 Yeah. But he doesn't appreciate the money that, you know, had to be made to get the shirt. Yeah. That you're still driving the taxi. The father's out driving the taxi so you could wear that shirt. Did you know that? Or you just think he likes to drive a taxi? No, he's driving a taxi so you can wear that shirt. That's why parents really want reciprocation from their kids. They want their kids to appreciate their sacrifice. Look at all I've done for you. But the kids may not be conscious. Similarly, we may not be conscious, or a family may not be conscious of the benefit they're getting from someone serving Krishna. Still, the benefit is there. Brendan's not conscious, but he's getting the benefit. So you go on with your Krishna consciousness with the full confidence that you're doing the best thing for your family. Now, on the relative plane, naturally you can be a little diplomatic to help them see your devotion. You have to be a little expert. Family life always involves a bit of politics, you know. You've noticed that? Yeah, so you have to be like a good politician, you know. So sometimes you have to do the diplomatic thing so that they'll not interfere with your devotional service. In Chaitanya Charitamrita, you can read about Lord Chaitanya's instructions to Raghunath Das before he was Raghunath Das Goswami. He wanted to run away from home, his rich home, and immediately join up with Lord Chaitanya. And his parents knew that, and they did everything to tie him down. But still, Raghunath Das would sneak off to be with Lord Chaitanya. The father, you know, and the mother got together to, what are we going to do? How can we stop our boy? The mother said to the father, can't you do something so he won't be able to leave home? The father said, what more do you expect me to do? I've married him to a beautiful woman. If that doesn't shackle him, what will? I don't know what to do anymore, you know. I've arranged that he marries the most beautiful wife. He's got wealth. I don't know how to tie him down anymore. Raghunath Das would keep running away to meet with Lord Chaitanya. Finally, Lord Chaitanya told him, stop acting like a crazy fellow. Just go back home and externally do your household duties, but in your heart, always be thinking about how you can serve Krishna. And then the right time to leave home will come. Don't act like a crazy fellow. Just be cool. Be strategic. Go home and externally do your family affairs, but in your heart, you're always thinking, how can you serve Shri Radha Krishna? So Raghunath Das did that. And gradually, you know, he saw an opening, how he could sneak away from home. So remember Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instruction to Raghunath Das. Don't be that crazy fellow, all these abrupt running aways, and, you know, just go back home and be cool, be calm. Externally, you do everything nicely, but internally, your consciousness is situated elsewhere. Krishna consciousness means how to keep a cool head. Not to be a fanatic. Not to do things in a jarring, abrupt way. No, to have cool, restrained intelligence. Okay? Anything else? So, Linda, you have a question? Are you old enough now to ask questions? No. None of the men have questions. Yes, same address.
Well, sometimes I feel like I don't spend enough time with my children and all that. Like, I'm not doing my I used to run the restaurant for long hours. So, if you're in my position, how would you identify this?
How old are your children?
21, 18, 30.
Well, certainly when they're young, you have to spend time. 13 years old is a very critical time, especially these days. Most kids start their sinful activities these days at 12 or 13. So you have to put in a lot of time. Boy or girl who's 13? 13 girl. Yeah, it's a very confusing time for a girl, right? Right? Yes, everything's confusing. So the father is very important for a daughter. So the father should spend time. 21 and 18, oh, they basically are independent, you know. They may even tell you yes, 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 but, you know, by that age, they're doing their own thing. Right? Is the 18 or 21 year old here? Who's the 18? Yes? 21. 21. You're doing your own thing, right? You have your own vision, right? Huh? Yes. Anyway, of course, if the 18 or 21 year old still want to rely on their father, that's very nice. So the father should be there to reciprocate. Strong parents are the only thing that will can help to bring children through in these crazy times today. When the children feel an obligation to their parents, it keeps them out of a lot of trouble. When they feel, oh, I can't do this to my mother or father. I can't do such a thing. It'll make them feel so bad. You felt like that sometimes? Huh? It's a great restraint. Oh, my mother wouldn't like this. My father wouldn't like this if I did this. So it's very important that if our Krishna conscious fathers do not spend time with their children, then what will the child, what protection will the child have in today's crazy world? If you have a nice Krishna conscious family, you should be very happy to spend time. What does your wife think? Yes? Huh? Of course. Family of devotees is a very rare thing. A family of those inclined toward Krishna consciousness is a very special thing. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings, Manasa Deho Gehu Yogi Chumur, Apilintuya Parinanda Kishore. Oh, Nanda Kishore, oh Krishna, whatever I have, my mind, my body, my home, it's all yours. So you have to run the home knowing that Krishna is the proprietor. Your home is your is Krishna's business if you're running for Krishna. Yeah, so think like that. This is Krishna's shop. I'm running this shop for Krishna. That's your family. And you have to preach to your kids constantly. Explain to them why they don't do certain things. explain to them the proper understanding. Otherwise, they don't want to just do things blindly because, well, Daddy said don't do this. You have to explain to them the ramifications, the results of all their activities. Explain to them of all the possibilities they could do, good and bad. Take the time to do that. Take the time to preach to your children. Don't think it's all in vain. They may go through a rebellious period, but they'll all come back to some degree to how they were raised. According to mundane psychologists, by the time the child is 27, the child reverts to how the parents raised the child. You may have to go through some stormy years before then, but that's all part of the joys of parenthood. Of course, raising disciples is a lot like raising children. I was speaking with Boris and Peru about that this afternoon. You know, you have to, the spiritual master has to be there with the disciples as they go through various phases and ups and downs, and patience is required, and sometimes you have to be give correction, even though you'd rather not. So by all means, in your Krishna conscious home, assume responsibility. It's Krishna's bhakta program you're running. If you have a good wife, let her know. I'm so happy to have a nice, supportive Krishna conscious wife as you. I'm going to do everything I can so this family is successful. Okay?
What if our, in our mood of saying for devotion, let's say when we have a family, obviously we have to spend more time with the family before the children and all that, and then our day of devotion or service to the same temple or any function is diminished. So how do we balance it up to also try to help the temple or the devotees or other devotees in terms of running a festival or whatever, and in time as well?
That just involves time management. You have to do both. It's just a question of organizing, that's all. It's not one thing or the other. You have to do both. It's just a question of time management. The more you make your home a temple, the more it's easy to see how to combine both things. The temple in your home and the temple itself.
So the temple at home will be a
Yes, you should have a temple in your home should be a temple, and Krishna's a proprietor. And by coming to the temple here, you get the strength to go on making your home a temple. Because, you know, home life means a lot of familiarity creeps in between husband and wife and kids and their parents. But if you come to the temple, you get rejuvenated and you can see each other with a spiritual vision. All right. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna.